When you think of the Olympics, you might think about the major events, a lot of pageantry, the Olympic rings, flags from around the world. But that's not the whole story. In fact, there's a lot of quirky stuff that's happened over the course of the 29 summer and 23 winter Olympic Games. For instance, did you know painting was an event? And then there's the guy whose official marathon time went over 54 years. He didn't win the gold. Speaking of medals, when do those start showing up? And what's the deal with the five rings anyway? Our next guest captures these unique and often forgotten moments in Olympic history in a new book, and you could join us at 800-642-1234. Are you an Olympics fan? What's your favorite unconventional Olympic sport? Is there a game or activity that you think should be in the Olympics? Is there a particular athlete or story that you think people ought to know more about? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, memories, or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeremy Fuchs is a sports reporter and writer. He's the author of Total Olympics, every obscure, hilarious, dramatic, and inspiring tale worth knowing. Jeremy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this book, it's obviously a labor of love, and you cover the good, the bad, and the ugly about the Olympics. After all this, what do you think about the Olympics? Do you still have that love for the games?
Well, given the fact that I've watched Olympics pretty much 24/7 since they started last week, I guess the answer would be yes. I've always loved the Olympics. It's always been sort of appointment viewing for me every few years. This year is no different. And so to get the opportunity to really explore them, sort of every inch of them was really a great joy for me.
As you're watching this year's Olympics in Japan, what has stood out to you for the update of the book in a couple of years? What stories are you seeing that you say, yeah, that would be in my book if I wrote it after this Olympics?
Well, yeah, I mean, given the COVID situation, you know, I feel like every day could be a whole other section of the book. I mean, just recently, there was an American track and field athlete who tested positive for COVID, and briefly, the entire Australian track contingent had a quarantine. You know, there's, because of the delay, which is unprecedented, and then, you know, the restrictions and sort of measures that are, you know, taking place on a daily basis. Yeah, it could be a whole separate book, probably.
Now, I teased a couple of the stories. You tell a lot of stories in your book. One of them, the missing marathoner who had a time that I could even aspire to complete a marathon. Could you tell the story of that? What was that, 54-year marathon?
Yeah, so Shizo Kanakuri, a Japanese marathoner. This is at the 1912 Games in Stockholm, Sweden. And, you know, before the Games, he was one of, you know, Japan's best, one of the better marathon runners in the world. But he gets to Stockholm, he had to take it wasn't so easy to get, to fly, you know, to go over the world at that point. And so it took him a while to get there. When he gets to Sweden, it's super hot for the marathon day. Actually, half the runners ended up bowing out because of the heat. Kanakuri is kind of going through it, and it's clear that the weather is affecting him, you know, being in a different time zone, all that is affecting him. And so about midway through the race, he sort of veers off the course and kind of finds himself in the garden of a Swedish family. And the Swedish family was having a party or a picnic of some sort. And he sort of hung out there for a while. He fell asleep under a tree. He had some orange juice. And then afterwards he left, he was done. He went home. He just wanted to basically get the heck out of Dodge. And that was all well and good. He participated in the 1920 games. He would have participated in 1916 had those not been canceled due to World War I. And he went on with his life. But the Swedish Olympic officials thought he was missing, like an official missing person. They had no idea where he was. And it took them 50 years before anyone realized. It was a Swedish television program who found him 50 years later in 1957. They, you know, said, hey, why don't you come on back? So in 1967, he came on back, he finished it. And so he holds the record, I guess, for the longest time it takes to finish a marathon. And that's 54 years, 8 months, 6 days, 5 hours, 32 minutes, and 20.3 seconds.
I'm glad they got it to the second, too. I wouldn't have accepted anything less. Now, I mentioned a lot of events have come and gone in the Olympics. So we've got skateboarding, for example, this year. A couple of weird ones, weird to me anyway, painting was an Olympic event. And there were other art events too. Tell us about the art part of the Olympics way back in the day.
Yeah, so art in the Olympics from the 1896, the first modern games, to 1948, there was art in every Olympics. There was painting, there was sculpture, architecture, literature, you name it, it was there. And so the idea was Pierre de Coubertin, who was the founder of the International Olympic Committee, was very big on the sort of mind-body connection, if the mind's working right, the body's working right, and vice versa. And so he wanted, in addition to sporting events, sort of these more intellectual, cultural events. And so for a long time, there was art. And as you're hearing this, it's in a very incongruent fit, right? But they were judged, like many Olympic events were judged. There was, plenty of medalists. Although what was weird about it is that, in some events you might get, this is my favorite one, the dramatic work section in 1928 in Amsterdam. Somebody won silver, somebody from Italy won silver, but no one won gold and no one won bronze. It was just him. And there was other times where somebody won gold, but no one won silver and no one won bronze. It was a very sort of odd way of doing it, obviously. It was not canceled because it was art. It was canceled because, particularly in the early days of the Olympics, the idea of amateurism was, front and center. The idea that you had to be an amateur to even compete in the Olympics. And for many of these artists were not amateurs, they were professional artists. And so that was actually the reason it was ended, not because it didn't make any sense.
Talking to Jeremy Fuchs about his new book, Total Olympics, Every Obscure, Hilarious, Dramatic, and Inspiring Tale Worth Knowing. And reading through your book, Jeremy, I think a lot of people have had the idea, and I've thought this at various points in my life, too bad the Olympics have gotten away from the pure thing before politics got involved or money or scandals or cheating or doping or whatever. That's one of those golden ages that may never have existed, if I'm reading your book right, right?
Oh, yeah. The Olympics have been political since the get-go. I think you can trace the story of the world in many ways through the Olympics. It was, from the beginning, a way for countries to sort of assert themselves, to sort of make these grand gestures of, we are the best. There was very little kumbaya. It was always a competition, and that's what it was meant to be. There was, in the early days, more of the amateurism where, these athletes weren't professionals and they were just competing for sport. And that has obviously changed, but it has always been a sort of political venue that happens to have sports. And we've seen throughout history and, up until today, sort of these proxy wars being fought, between countries during an event, the Miracle on Ice and hockey, but even just individual events, country versus country. And it's not just the U.S., it's all over. And so for us to sort of think that the Olympics are just all fun and games, there's certainly, a large part of it is fun. And, these athletes are doing it for themselves, but, so we track the medals for a reason, right? It's a race between countries. And so this is a political thing. It's always been political. It always will be. And if anything, it's just gotten more as time has gone on.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ben is with us in Watertown. Ben, hi.
Yeah, hello. I remember the women's marathon when it first got going. There was a horrible moment where a female runner entered the stadium through a tunnel. And she was going to get all the glory, of course. She was going to be the winner. She's way ahead. And then some fake runner came out of the other end of the tunnel and stole all of her glory, I guess, all of her cheers. And the look on her face when she realized, thought, did I somehow not realize there was somebody ahead of me?
Ben, thanks a lot for the call. I think that was not Olympics. Our producer, Rachel, found a story. That was the Boston Marathon back in 1980, it looks like. But that said, Jeremy, you found moments of cheating and chicanery at various points of the Olympics. Any stories you'd want to share?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all know sort of the doping of the last, 20, 30 years, and obviously that exists. To me, what's just as fascinating and in some ways more hilarious is what would happen in the early games. It happened in the marathon. Athletes used champagne as sort of the energy drink of choice in the early 1900s. They used rat poison, was considered a stimulant, which obviously wasn't, actually had pretty bad effects on the athletes. Rat poison, some brandy, and brandy and egg whites, actually. So, yeah, for as long as there have been sports, athletes have tried to get an edge. Over time, it's become more sophisticated and probably more effective. But if athletes are willing to put rat poison in their body, they're probably willing to do a whole number of things.
We're talking about some of the unique historical moments in the history of the Olympic Games. Sports writer Jeremy Fuchs has a new book out. It's called Total Olympics, Every Obscure, Hilarious, Dramatic, and Inspiring Tale Worth Knowing. Forget basketball, gymnastics, and diving. How about pistol dueling, painting, or solo synchronized swimming? We're talking to Jeremy about legendary Olympic characters, too. Forgotten records, moments of controversy. You could join in if you have a moment that you remember you want to bring to our attention in the Olympics. And do you love watching them, maybe despite some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeremy, pistol dueling. Safer than I thought when I first saw that was an event. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this was, before Alexander Hamilton was, back in vogue and duels were a thing. Shooting has a long history at the Olympics and it continues to this day. But for one sort of ill-fated, they did sort of dueling, obviously not with real bullets, but everything else was about as you would expect from a duel. They quickly realized, as they had done with Olympic events, that probably wasn't the best idea and kept it to only one. But there's a long history of that, of Olympic sports sort of appearing for one or two Olympics, and then they sort of realize that this is a really bad idea.
Is there one that you'd like to see make a comeback, Jeremy, from all your research?
Yeah, and this has gotten some like momentum over the years. There's been different movements, very unsuccessful, but to get it back, and I think it's tug of war. In the early 1900s, tug of war was in three Olympics, and the Americans were actually quite good at it, and it was just like you imagine from the playground days. And I think it would be first of all, it'd be fun just to see, the sort of show of strength. And I think you could probably, imagine getting some pretty amazing athletes, maybe some big names on the team, and you're just sort of going for it. I think that could be really cool. And the fact that it has its roots, it wasn't just one Olympics, it actually was a few. I think it would make some sense, and I think it would get a lot of viewership. I think people would be, pretty curious to give it a look.
And we focused on some of the weirder moments, but Jeremy, inspiring tales also made the cut for your book. Can you share maybe an inspiring or impressive Olympic performance or performer that maybe doesn't get, their story told as much as they should these days?
Yeah, one of the great pleasures about writing this book was getting to know some of these stories, right? And especially the ones, from other countries or from, from an earlier time. And to me, one of the most impressive and inspiring is the story of Eddie Egan. He is the only person to win the gold medal at both the summer and winter games. He was a boxer and he was a bobsledder. There's a few athletes who have competed in both summer and winter. You've seen recently a trend of track athletes trying bobsled to some extent, but he was a fantastic boxer. He won in 1920, and then 12 years later, he won in bobsled. He was not an experienced bobsledder. He kind of just joined right before the game started. He was obviously an incredible athlete. He was a lawyer. He studied law at Harvard. He went to Oxford. He fought in World War II. He lived sort of an amazing, he also set a world record for fastest circumnavigation of the globe on different airlines. He was somebody who did just about everything, to a very, very high standard. And that's sort of what you see through a lot of Olympic games. It's just people who are incredibly impressive, who achieve so many things, obviously on, the competition fields, but also off it. And to me, he's somebody that we kind of forget because it was in the, 1920s and 30s, but it's somebody I think is worth remembering.
Talking to sports writer Jeremy Fuchs about his new book, Total Olympics, every obscure, hilarious, dramatic, and inspiring tale worth knowing. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if Olympics are a must-watch event for you, if you have a favorite moment from the past or a concern about the Olympics and how they work. 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Jeremy, you've mentioned a couple times the initial idea of the amateur status of the Olympics, and you share the story of Jim Thorpe, who essentially lost medals for pretty much making lunch money playing minor league baseball. And now today, you know, you've got highly paid NBA superstars playing in the games. Can you talk about that bit of Olympic injustice?
Yeah, for the first half of the Olympics up until the 60s and 70s, and really kind of ended in the 90s, amateurism was the stated ideal of the Olympics. The idea that these were, you know, quote unquote, ordinary people, not professionals, who could come together for this Olympic event. It was obviously never really the case. You know, Soviet athletes were sort of professional in their way, and they kind of looked the other way. But it is a bit odd to think of somebody like Jim Thorpe, maybe one of the greatest athletes ever, you know, in any sport of any country, you know, dominates in 1912 in track and field and gets his medals revoked because he basically made $2 a week playing minor league semi-pro baseball. And then you turn on basketball and Kevin Durant makes untold millions. It's obviously changed. Athletes can now sort of cash in on their Olympic medals with commercials and endorsements and other things like that. I think that's as it should be. You know, these are obviously world-class athletes. They should, you know, probably be compensated as such. And there are many who aren't. You know, if you don't win, if you're in a sport that is not very high profile, you know, you're often having to take on a full-time job in addition to training for the Olympics, which, you know, seems sort of impossible to do. And so, yeah, I think it's a change that still needs to happen. Obviously, there are many athletes who cash in quite handsomely. But there are many athletes now and throughout history who haven't been able to sort of get their piece of the pie.
And Jim Thorpe, something I learned from your book, not only was he an amazing athlete, he actually won medals in sports that he just had picked up a few months before the games. Like, he didn't know initially that the javelin throw, you could take a running start.
Yeah, you know, Jim Thorpe is, and I think in part because his medals were sort of revoked, they were later given back, but by then it sort of lost the power. I think now don't realize just how amazing of an athlete Jim Thorpe was, in football, in track and fields, in baseball. I think it's a fair thing to say he's probably one of the greatest athletes of all time. And being able to pick up basically an Olympic sport before the Olympics and then dominate is just unheard of. And you could not imagine anybody doing that today. So it's a shame that he got a raw deal and got caught up in this amateurism debate before, you know, people on a wide scale really knew and know just, you know, how incredible he was.
Go back to our callers. Deborah is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I am wondering if your guest has any stories about the equestrian events.
People and horses in the Olympics together. Anything you want to share, Jeremy?
Yeah, so equestrian obviously has a long history in the Olympics, and there's two stories that I think really stand out. One is one of my favorites, and it's a little apropos given the conditions we're in, but in 1956, the games were in Melbourne, Australia. Every event except equestrian, there was a horse quarantine. So upon entering Australia, horses had to quarantine for 6 months, which obviously wasn't tenable for the Olympics. And so they decided to move the equestrian portion only to Sweden. And so they had an equestrian games, they called it. Queen Elizabeth from England happened to be in Sweden for sort of a royal trip. She hung out there. Her horse actually won a medal in that games. And they sort of had their own little Olympic party in Sweden, and while the rest of the games were happening, you know, on the other side of the world. And I think this has a little bit of, you know, some similarities, mm-hmm. given our constant quarantining over the last year and a half. And then another story in the book is the story of a Mexican equestrian, Humberto Marlys, one of the best of all time, won multiple medals, and sort of after his career became quite the criminal, and was eventually became a sort of big drug deal and was caught, and sentenced to a major prison sentence before dying shortly thereafter, which I always found a fascinating, sort of riches to rags, I guess, type story.
Deborah, thanks a lot for the call with the question. And Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's Jeremy Fuchs, sports reporter and writer. We talked to him about his new book. It's called Total Olympics, every obscure, hilarious, dramatic, and inspiring tale worth knowing.